How many of you have ever seen this book, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day? You might have read it to a child or a grandchild, or if you're young enough, have had it read to you. Sometimes days are like his was that day, with accidents and injuries, being ignored, feeling mistreated, just having a tough time all around. And nobody really saying anything when he complained. His tough time would have happened even in Australia, where Alexander dreamed of escaping, or wherever we occasionally think we'd like to escape to, when, as the author, psychologist Scott Peck wrote, was the case in the beginning of his famous The Road Less Traveled, we experience the reality that life is hard. It is sometimes difficult, sometimes painful. Love can be that way too. How have you experienced love? How have you changed in the way you are a loving human being? When Jesus was alive in the last of the century before the Common Era, and in the first of the century of the Common Era, he grew up with whatever understandings and practices about love that he learned in his family and culture, and that were taught by his religion, Judaism. Surely he learned the Ten Commandments, including the one about honoring your father and your mother. He learned about loving your neighbor as yourself, and later he taught about turning the other cheek. But it is said that he violently overturned tables in the temples, expressing his disagreement with the religious practice of his time. And he asked his disciples to leave their parents behind and follow him. And then he taught, interpreting teachings of his Jewish heritage, sometimes embracing parts of that heritage, sometimes turning other parts on their head, preaching to love one's enemy as well as one's neighbor. His disciples, who surely loved their teacher, did not always express their love perfectly. Peter, it is said, fell asleep while on the watch the night Jesus was taken prisoner and then killed. Judas betrayed Jesus, and all the disciples scattered after he died, failing to support one another in a loving way in their grief, in that early part of their grieving. Sometimes death and grief reveal the demanding difficulties and complexities of love, and it took a while before the disciples could come back together to support each other and carry on the legacy that Jesus left behind. It takes time to navigate through loss and grief. In the early church, there were disagreements about who Jesus was and what they might be called to do in his name. And Paul, an evangelist spreading the faith to those who were not Jewish, projected ideals of love onto the followers in the various Christian congregations of that early church. And learning that the people in the church at Corinth were squabbling, he sent them a letter calling them to a higher standard. Many of you heard this letter. All of you heard it this morning, parts of it, and many of you have heard it spoken at a wedding. Paul wrote, "If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions and if I hand over my body to be burned, but do not have love, I gain nothing. He wrote, love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. And Paul concluded this section of his letter to Corinth with these words, and now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. When a couple who's getting married chooses this reading, I think to myself, anyone in a real family, in a real relationship, in a real church community, in a real city knows that you can strive always to be patient and kind, and you will sometimes be impatient and unkind, grouchy or boastful about an accomplishment. You will occasionally be irritable or resentful or even rude. I can slip into grouchiness just because I'm hungry. I can be impatient if I have to wait in a long line. Anyone who has eyes open to see injustice, whether in a relationship of individuals or within the structures of communities, knows that some things ought not always be endured. There are limits to what we can bear and stay connected. Sometimes resistance is necessary. The challenge is to resist while drawing on the power of nonviolent love, as Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and their followers tried to do. And anyone who has engaged in an argument with a beloved knows the dangers of using the word always, or for that matter, the word never. Yet the first century Common Era evangelist Paul said, love never ends and love always believes. But guess what? Paul wasn't always right. He also thought women should obey their husbands and be silent in church. And we in liberal traditions know better than to disrespect women's humanity that way. People we love sometimes move away, or we become estranged, or a beloved person dies. Though not always, love often transcends our losses. I don't mean the idealized love that Paul was preaching, but the real, on-the-ground, complicated love that people have with each other, their families, and sometimes their communities. Death can reveal the layers of love, the ways we offered and received support, or sometimes did not. The care we shared and sometimes failed to share. The respect we offered and possibly the failures of respect. The ways we held each other up and the ways we let each other down. Death can reveal the complexity of love. The ways we and they were constant or possibly were disappointed or disappointing. Love is often complicated, whether between spouses, parents and children, between friends, groups of friends, or within a community. When I visit those who have lost a loved one, if they are able to speak vulnerably of the joys and the sorrows shared, the gifts they shared, and the ways they struggled, I sometimes hear things they would not like mentioned in the service. So I put parentheses around those notes to remember not to say them. And then I seek a way to communicate that their beloved, as is the case with all of us, their beloved, as fine as he or she was, wasn't perfect, was human. Did love as well as he or she knew how to do, was loved. One time a man in one of my early churches told me that his father was a mean person. Still, in the church service which only he attended, which was kind of an indication that his father was a mean person. In that service, I named that he loved his father, and his father loved him. And when I said his father loved him as well as he knew how, the man was deeply moved. Remembering a person's faults, their lack of kindness, even in the extreme, does not necessarily obscure an enduring love, or at least the wish for an enduring love. In spite of and sometimes because of the complications, the layers and the nuances in the relationship, I learned not to assume a lack of some love, some kind of love. Loving communities can also be complex. Along with feelings of welcome, of caring, of affirmation and appreciation, of being seen, there are also sometimes experiences of feeling hurt, of expectations unrealized. Sometimes when disappointments in one-to-one relationships or in communities are acknowledged and explored, there can be reconciliation and the growth of deeper understanding. This possibility of growing in understanding and reconciliation is the faith of the author, Parker Palmer, who teaches how to develop circles of trust within groups, circles in which people listen deeply, acknowledge what others say and feel, and ask questions so they can correct their own mistaken assumptions. And it's the faith of Scott Peck, who proposed that going below the surface and exploring differences is necessary for the development of true community. With couples planning marriage, I ask, what do you appreciate about yourself and your partner? What might annoy you or be of concern about yourself and about your partner? And not surprisingly, those people often answer about appreciation. They say more things about their partner than they say about themselves. And when the question is about what is of concern, they often say more things about themselves than they do about their partners. And I ask, in the course of your relationship, have you noticed changes in yourself, your partner, your interaction with each other? I encourage practices of appreciation, of honest sharing, of listening. And because limits and acknowledgement and awareness of limits is a very important part of love, I ask them about limits. What would be deal breakers? What would be completely unacceptable in your relationship, on your own part or on the part of your partner? I ask them about time spent alone and together, about relationships with prospective in-laws, about sexual expectations and experience in relation to their expectations. Love is not limitless. Anne Morrow Lindbergh understood that a loving couple are not one person, and there needed to be space. She recognized that when you love someone, you do not love them all the time in exactly the same way from moment to moment. Those who love need to be aware of the self and the other and respectful of differences and limits. And this too is true of communities of caring. Love within them endures better if structures and practices respect that people bring differences, and practices are created and clarified so people know what they might be able to expect and where the limits are. When I came to this congregation almost 5 years ago, we negotiated a letter of agreement that helped define what responsibilities are mine and what are yours. And that initial step helped us to become more aware so we could strive for a caring shared ministry, though sometimes cultural understandings and expectations blurred the boundaries. Sometimes both you and I thought something was our job, and sometimes Neither you nor I thought something was our job. Ideals of one culture, religion, or family about what is caring sometimes conflict with those of another. Loving even when people are all of the same background is not a piece of cake. No one practices love perfectly, even when the ideals are shared. Love needs practice. And practice may make improvement likely, but rarely, if ever, does it lead to perfection. And healthy loving needs limits and boundaries grounded in awareness of self-care and care of the other, self-respect and respect for the other. To be that aware, we need to know who we and the other are and are striving to become, and be open to learning what will hurt and what will help. In other words, we need to be mindful. Spiritual practices help us gain deeper knowledge, taking time to cultivate awareness of the divine spark that is the truth about each of us, whether we are in harmony or in conflict. Taking time for inner awareness of how our minds, emotions, bodies, and spirits are. Time sometimes to reach out for help from another person, perhaps a counselor, so we can attend to what we are learning about ourselves and those we love. Communities also need that time to invite deep listening and honest sharing. Nations in conflict need to find channels for discovering the humanity of those with whom they are in opposition. So, the last time I was in New York, my granddaughter and I had seen an off-Broadway cabaret show. Interpreting the meanings of the monologues and dialogues differently, we had a hard time accepting each other's perspectives on what we had heard and seen. The question we were wrestling with was, what is important for gaining understanding among people in conflict? Is it discovering common humanity, as she thought, or was it appreciating differences, as I thought? It was hard for me to let go of the need to be right. Then my granddaughter told me a story from the book Just Mercy. A prison guard did not like a certain prisoner and his lawyer, whose race, socioeconomic background, and education were different than his, and the guard treated them disrespectfully, even cruelly. Then the guard overheard the prisoner talking about his misery when, as a child, he was shunted from one foster home to another. And the prison guard suddenly started treating them more courteously. And when asked why, he said, "I had the same experience he did, being tossed from one foster home to another. I realized we are the same." And I realized how powerfully that story touched my granddaughter's heart, and it touched mine too. And I knew that we were both neither right nor wrong. The important thing was our connection to each other. Love can be complicated. Sometimes boundaries have been crossed so profoundly that a person cannot let go of their anger, fear, or pain, and has to part for self-protection. For many of us in our relationships, we sometimes muddle along, misunderstanding each other or inadvertently hurting each other. And then, if we will stay connected and be open to learning more about ourselves and our beloveds, having the opportunity to gain new understanding, reconciliation is more possible. I've learned that we often cling to love, or the hope of love, or the memory of the hope of love, even when love has been troubled and when life ends. Love helps us thrive as babies. It meets some but not all of our needs, and it enriches our lives. In its power, it can sometimes hurt and sometimes heal if we open ourselves to the practices of deep listening, checking assumptions, speaking honestly with care. And as we will notice next Sunday, on Memorial Day Sunday, those we love, whether near or far, still living or gone before us, often remain in our hearts so long as life and memory last. In this sense, love is always. Who and what do you love? How do you practice loving? In what ways has your understanding and experience of love changed? What is there still for you to learn about love?